So this morning, I would like to tell you a story. It's going to be a little bit different than probably a lot of sermons that you've heard before. After all, the scriptures are mostly stories. Actually, 40% of God's word is stories. And God knows that stories are really powerful. Stories have the ability to change our minds, to get us thinking, to make sense of our confused world, to make sense of our reality. And so this morning, I would like to share with you a story. The story of the woman who never laughed. The story of the woman who never laughed. So this woman, she giggled when her husband told a stupid joke, and she even chuckled at the punchline of the late-night talk show host. She giggled and she chuckled, but she never laughed. And the reason why she never laughed is because she knew that the thing she longed for most would be the thing that she could never have. You know that kind of laughter that just comes out when you have no words to describe what's going on the inside? Well, my wedding day produced that kind of laughter. The other week, we celebrated Becky and Dave's wedding, and I could see that same face on both of them. They just couldn't help but smile and laugh. Well, I remember my wedding day clearly. It was the best day of my life. I was marrying my best friend, and all my favorite people were there to celebrate the day with us. I woke up that morning without an alarm clock. The air that day smelled fresher than before. I just couldn't stop smiling. Every joke was funny, and I was just ecstatic to see everyone. After all, I was marrying the love of my life, and I just couldn't help but laugh. Well, the woman in our story this morning never laughed like that, because the thing that she longed for most, it would be the thing that she could never have. So I would like to tell you the story of the woman who never laughed. Her name was Sarah. His name was Abraham. Sarah means princess, and Abraham means father of many. So a beautiful princess and a father of many are married, and they live happily ever after. Well, not exactly. After Sarah and Abraham were married, the Lord came and appeared to Abraham and gave Abraham a promise. He promised them that he was going to make Abraham and Sarah into a great nation. He was going to bless them. He was going to make his name great. And this couple would be so blessed, man, they wouldn't even know what to do with it. This blessing would extend and reach across national boundaries. It would cross time. All the nations of the world would be blessed through the lineage of Abraham and Sarah. So from the tribes of Northern Ireland to the tribes here in Manchester-by-the-Sea, all the world would be blessed through the lineage of Abraham and Sarah. That's what the Lord promised. Well, this promise didn't come to a surprise to Abraham. After all, his name meant the father of many. But for Sarah, this was overwhelming news. You see, Sarah had no children of her own. She couldn't have children. Sarah was barren. Sarah spent her whole life longing for a child. She lived many sad years knowing that she would never have a child. But here the Lord delivers this impossible promise of a barren woman having a child. In Sarah's day, children were an integral part of life, a little bit different than our culture and our world today. Let me explain. So I'm the oldest of seven children. It's me, Isaiah, Leah, Ian, Ethan, Eli, and Ezekiel. My dad, my mom gets our names mixed up even to this day. And my growing up, my dad would joke with us that the reason why he had so many kids was that he could use us as a tax write-off. But he was joking, of course. But to have children today, even with good health insurance, as you know, it takes a lot of money, takes a lot of time. Raising a child, putting them through school, keeping them well fed and clothed, well, I don't have to tell you, it's a lot of work. In the ancient world, things were a little bit different. People lived in close-knit communities, whole families, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, great-great-grandparents. They lived together in tents, and they traveled with their animals. It was their way of life. So when a baby was born, there was huge celebration because that meant there was another set of hands to help out on the farm. There's another set of hands to share the workload. So in our culture, we work to provide income for our families and for our children, while in the ancient world, children were inherently the income. So children held a very special place in the lives of people in the ancient world. This is how Abraham and Sarah felt. There was a practice in the East and still practiced among many ancient Bedouin peoples where after a couple is married, they'll take a pomegranate and they'll cut open the pomegranate and take the seeds out and throw it on the front door of a newly married couple's home or their tent. And this is their way of saying, may you have as many children as there are seeds on the ground. A little bit different than we think about children today and in our culture. But that's how Abraham and Sarah felt. To have children was an amazing thing. So Sarah's barrenness was a tragedy. It was a tragedy. But Abraham loved his princess immensely. He worked incredibly hard. All he wanted was to see his wife be happy. He wanted to see her laugh. You know, Sarah was always impressed by Abraham. Even though she wasn't able to provide children, Abraham did very well for himself. He became a real estate tycoon. He owned lots of land and cattle, and he even hired men and women to help out on this traveling farm. He would even provide food and shelter as a part of their benefits. On the weekends, Abraham would go golfing with his business partners. But even though Abraham worked so hard, he knew deep down that the thing that Sarah longed for most would be the thing that he could never provide, no matter how hard he'd worked or how hard he tried. So not only was this Sarah's barrenness a strain on her family, but it was an enormous source of shame for her emotionally. Many believed that barrenness was a curse from God. And so Sarah wondered, am I cursed by God? All her friends had growing families, and then Sarah's there watching by in despair. She hated going to her friends' baby showers. And she hated walking by the baby clothes section at Walmart. Every day, she was reminded that the thing she longed for most would be the thing that she could never have. You know, this shame, this kind of shame, it follows us everywhere. It keeps us up at night. It keeps us in bed in the morning. We all know what it's like to carry that kind of shame, don't we? When I was younger, I was really overweight, and my weight haunted me. I hated going clothes shopping to buy a new shirt or pants because nothing ever fit just right. I remember when I was in the eighth grade, I had quit the track team after my coach had me run a 100-meter dash against the fastest upperclassmen in our school. And to be honest, even today, I do my best to work out and diet, not because I want to be healthy, but because my worst nightmare is going back to that old place of shame. I think we all know how Sarah felt. For you, it may be like Sarah, not being able to have a child, or perhaps losing a child. It may be your weight and how you think other people view you. It may be that your job doesn't provide the kind of income and the lifestyle that you so desire. It may be that your marriage just never really lived up to the expectations. I think we all know how Sarah felt. Sarah wished that she could just flip a switch, something that would just change it all. She thought to herself, if I could just have one child to call my own, my whole life would be different. And just then, the light bulb turned on. She found a magical switch, or at least she thought she did. So, like many stories in the Bible, that Sarah's story doesn't have a PG rating. And what she does next is going to sound very foreign to our ears. Let me explain. So, in Sarah and Abraham's day, for couples who were unable to have a child, they had an alternate solution. If the wife was unable to have a child, she would choose one of her hired servants to have a child with her husband. It was agreed then that this child would be the couple's heir. It would be this couple who would take care of the couple in their old age. This child would receive the couple's inheritance. It was their version of a surrogacy. And Sarah knew a lot of people who did this. After all, it was a common cultural practice. And it was expected. After all, who would take care of Abraham and Sarah in their old age? Who would inherit Abraham and Sarah's wealth? So this was Sarah's plan. She gave Abraham her servant Hagar, and Hagar became pregnant and gave birth to a boy named Ishmael. And Ishmael means, may God hear. After Ishmael was born, Sarah tried to be happy. She really did. She tried to laugh, but she just couldn't. And she knew something was not right. While culturally acceptable and even expected, she thought back to the promises the Lord had made her and her husband. It would be through them too that the promised son would be delivered. Sarah's lack of hope drove her to do something against God's will, to go against what God has promised. So would God still follow through on his promise? At this point in the story, Sarah is 89 years old, and Abraham is 99. And Abraham was sitting outside under a tree, doing what most 99-year-olds do, sitting, waiting, and thinking. You know, as he was sitting there under the tree, he was dozing off, thinking back to his life. He thought back to when the Lord had called Abraham and Sarah out of a life of idolatry and made this incredible promise. He thought back to that time when he almost lost Sarah in Egypt. Oh, and how could Abraham ever forget his wild nephew Lot? He was always having to clean up after his messes. And in that moment under the tree, Abraham thought back to Sarah. Sarah was there through it all, every step of the way. Life must be so hard for Sarah, he thought to himself. And just as he began to doze off, he thought back to those different times when the Lord had promised that it would be them too, through them too, that they would have a son. As he was dozing off in that Middle Eastern heat, all of a sudden, he was woken up, startled awake by the presence of three men standing right in front of him. And as a good host, Abraham ran into the tent, told Sarah about these three men. And he said, we need to put a meal together for these people. After all, I mean, they're traveling alone. They don't have any animals. They don't have any food. He was a good host, and so was Sarah. And so Sarah threw together a meal to them, and as they were preparing things for the meal, Abraham looked at and glanced at Sarah and said, you know, these men, they seem really strange. And he was right. Sarah had fixed a beautiful steak dinner for these men with mashed potatoes and asparagus grilled just right. It wasn't customary for Sarah to eat with the men, so she had stayed in the tent, and Abraham made sure to care for these special guests. So as they finished up the main course, they loosened their tunics to make room for dessert. And here's where we pick up in our main text for this morning, in Genesis chapter 18, verse 9. So these men, they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, oh, she's in the tent. And as the words slipped off his tongue, he thought to himself, strange, I haven't introduced them to Sarah. How do they know that I have a wife? How do they know that her name is Sarah? And in that moment, it clicked. The Lord was in their midst. And then the Lord says, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Sarah's in the tent, and you can imagine that her ears perked up. Previously, Abraham had always relayed these messages to Sarah, but this would be the first time that Sarah would hear the promises for herself. The passage says that Abraham and Sarah were old, they were advanced in years, the way of women had ceased to be with Sarah. Even if Sarah was able to have children, she was long past the age of being able to have a child. So because of that, Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? In that moment, those feelings of heartache and shame filled her body. The Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. Sarah didn't know what to think. She was scared. What will having a baby do to my 90-year-old body? She was confused. Barren 90-year-old women do not have babies. But excited. After years and years of waiting, me? I am going to have a baby? All that Sarah could do was deny it, saying, I didn't laugh, because she was afraid. And the Lord graciously responded, no, but you did laugh. For the first time, the woman who never laughed, laughed. And this would not be the last. Now, before we judge Sarah for laughing, just a few verses prior to this one in chapter 17, the Lord had shared the same message with Abraham, and Abraham laughed. He actually fell on his face and laughed. The last time I had shared this story with somebody, someone came up to me and said, well, the one thing I want to know is how was Sarah punished for laughing at God? Man, don't we have that mindset too? We think that our unfaithfulness, our doubt, elicits God's punishment. Now, I know that the week after Easter, it's kind of a spiritual hangover. We've been at church all week long. We've gone to all these sorts of events. And now we're here at church. The pews aren't as filled just as much. But you know, the promises that we talked about and celebrated at Easter are still true. Man, if If it is not finished, as we celebrated last week, we are in big, big trouble. We are in big trouble. But the promise of the resurrection and the reality that a holy God poured out his wrath for all sinful humanity on himself is true. It's finished. Our doubt, and dare I say, even our sin, does not elicit God's punishment or judgment. All of that has been poured out on Christ. All of that has been poured out on Christ. So, in response to my friend who asked, what is Sarah's punishment? Oh, there's no punishment. There is only grace. There is only grace. And so for you who may doubt God's promises, for you who may wonder, is my life, is my struggle a punishment from God? I say no, and the scriptures say no. Life is just really hard. We live in a broken, broken, fallen world. But God's not mad at you. God wasn't mad at Abraham when he laughed and fell on his face laughing. And God was not mad at Sarah. He graciously responded. Let's continue in the story. A few months pass, and Sarah would wake up feeling sick. You know, she'd try to work through it. Every morning, she felt like she was going to hurl. The stench from the animals out back made it worse. And the thought popped into her head. I mean, could it be me having a baby? And she chuckled to herself, no, that's impossible, and went back to work. While Abraham was out conducting business deals and working alongside the farmers, it was really Sarah who kept things running in the background, balancing the book, managing Abraham's schedule. And so for the third time that day, she had wondered where she left her glasses. She thought, I mean, that would explain a lot, she thought to herself. But she didn't allow herself to believe such a thing. So she snickered to herself and went back to work, saying, that's impossible. She continued to wake up feeling sick every morning, forgetting simple things, and began to have these strange cravings. She quickly explained it all away, not allowing herself to believe such a thing. After all, an old barren woman having a baby? That's impossible. But one morning, she woke up and she looks in the mirror, and her stomach was getting bigger. She could no longer deny it. So Sarah ran to Abraham and said, God has done the impossible. Sarah finally gave birth to a boy and named him Isaac. And his name means laughter. The day Isaac was born was the best day of her life. She could hardly contain herself, and she laughed like she had never laughed before. I mean, she really laughed. She exclaimed that God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. So Sarah laughed. And how did God respond? He responded by fulfilling his promises. He responded in grace. The woman who never laughed could now laugh. God overcame Sarah's barrenness, and he did a miracle. It is how God has been doing things since the beginning. So think back to Genesis chapter 1 in the creation story, where God, he overlooks a barren cosmos, it is a formless void, and he speaks, and he creates life. And after Sarah, God would continue the line of promise through barren women. In the book of Luke, we meet another old barren couple, Elizabeth and Zechariah. And God promised that Elizabeth, in her old age, in her barrenness, would also have a son. And this son, John, would prepare the hearts and minds for the coming Messiah. In the following verses, we meet a young virgin woman named Mary. And Mary gave birth to Jesus. And this son, while similar to those who were born of a barren woman, would be a different kind of son, the Son of God. And this son would bring forgiveness and freedom and joy and laughter to a world that was once dead. This son would bring laughter to all the tribes and all the nations of the world, even those in Manchester-by-the-Sea, Massachusetts. While we lack the ability to save ourselves, God provided a savior for us through this miraculous birth. It's how he's been doing it since the beginning. And so the world and people like you and me who could never laugh can now really laugh. What we celebrate at Christmas time in the coming of Christ, what we celebrated last week, the death and resurrection of Jesus, proved what we learn in the story of the woman who never laughed, that for a God who can do the impossible, even our barren womb will do. You know, just like Sarah, we have an incredibly difficult time believing this promise. We live in a world and in a culture that believes the complete opposite. We want to believe that in our strength, we can do it. We can do the impossible in our strengths. After all, we live in a country built on the grit and talent and hard work of the strong. I want to believe that through my strengths, I can do the impossible. You know, there's this growing subculture of books and resources which are built on this very assumption. And these are books that I've read and found very helpful, and I'm sure books and resources that you have used. So for example, for 1999, you can take the Strength Finders test and determine what makes you feel strong. And so you can design your work and your daily habits around these strengths. Sounds pretty good. On Amazon for $18.35, you can buy the book High Performance Habits and learn how to make the most of every moment of every day and become a high-performing person. Or you can subscribe to the Ken Coleman podcast and learn about the proximity principle. The more time you spend with people who you want to become, over time, you'll eventually become like them and you'll have the strengths that they do. Sounds pretty good. Sounds good to me. I mean, after all, who doesn't want to be a stronger, fitter, more productive, healthier person? But these books and these trainings are built on this assumption that in our strengths, we can do the impossible. But you know, for some reason, God really likes showing up where we're weak. He really likes to use the old barren woman. God works through people like you, people like me, so that other people will have no other option but to say, "Wow, look at what God has done." You know, God works through churches like Cornerstone Church in Manchester-by-the-Sea so that others will have no other option but to say, "Wow, God has done the impossible." And when he does, we can step back and laugh, saying, "I guess God really can do the impossible." We may feel barren. We may feel like God can't use us because of our shame, because of our sin, because of our past, because of our weaknesses. But it's in that very spot in your life that God is able to overcome and use for his glory. For a God who can do the impossible, even our barren womb will do. And so now we are free to laugh. Would you pray with me?